The Mystic Pete Chronicles. We are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interview Nikki G, cult survivor and now educator and guide. And we wrap up the show with music by Solomon Burke. Stay tuned. It's October 26, 2024. Mystic Pete here with Nikki G of NikkiGSpeaks.com. Hi, Nikki G.
Hey, how you doing, Pete? Thanks for inviting me on.
I met you through Instagram. You know, sometimes great things come through social media on top of just all kinds of crazy stuff. And I'm so pleased that you were friendly and agreed to this interview. You're working with some pretty intense topics. How about you introduce yourself and you can explain it just right.
Okay. I am Nikki G, like you said, and I am a trauma survivor. I come from a narcissistic family background, and I'm also a five-time cult survivor. And so, you know, growing up in a religious household with narcissism, at the foundation, it kind of programmed me to be attracted to and attracted by a lot of toxic and narcissistic relationships. And so at the age of 19, you know, I became a Christian. It was more of a personal relationship now versus I'm a Christian because my parents were. And fun fact, how I became a Christian was not a typical, you know, altar call in a service or what have you, walk down into the front of the church and give your life to Christ. I started reading conspiracy theory type of books, and I went down the bunny trail, so to speak, and I just kept going and going and going. And everything I was reading about the end times and Illuminati and all this stuff, I kept seeing things referenced to the Bible, particularly the book of Revelation, Daniel, Ezekiel, things of that nature. And I grew up in church, so I knew of it, but I didn't see it from that lens. And so it caused me to go on this deep dive. And in doing so, and I'm going to be honest, I was thinking, all right, well, Jesus, you're the only way to get through this, or you're the only safety. So I'm going to give my life to you and you protect me from all this. So in my basement at the age, my basement was my room at the age of 19. That is how I became a Christian. And, you know, I wanted to be wholeheartedly with it. And so I went deep into it. I still was at the church I was raised in, with my family of origin, but then I needed more. I wanted more. And I found a cult. I didn't know it was a cult, but I found a ministry that was predominantly Black. But the kicker was there were so many young people, and they were really into, you know, their relationship with Jesus and with God. And it seemed sincere. Like, they weren't going to the movies on Friday nights. They were reading their Bible. They were praying. They were, you know, taking prayer lists from different people, and it was sincere and it was attractive to me. And so I became a part of this ministry, and that started me down a whole road of eventually being part of four other cults. Well, we can get into that later, but that was part of my journey. And in 2020, we were all under lockdown in this world with the pandemic, and I found myself on a social media app called Clubhouse. It was audio based, and we had nothing else to do in society. A lot of people jumped on, and I kind of found my tribe there. I found people who have come out of narcissistic dynamics, but particularly spiritual narcissists, spiritual abuse. And so I kept realizing maybe there's something to this. So I started a club in 2021 called Spiritual Abuse and Cults. And I ran that for about 2.5 years. And on that space, it's still there. I'm not using that club anymore, but a lot of archives of some of the stuff that I spoke on is still there. And I realized in doing that, you know what, I think I'm supposed to be doing this. I think I'm supposed to be doing more. So I went and got some training. I didn't want to just go by experience only, and I got some training on trauma and understanding trauma. Still, I'm getting training on that, and really being able to understand how to support trauma survivors and cult survivors. And now I have Nikki G Speaks, and I lead support groups, and I'm also a co-founder of the Black Religious Trauma Recovery Network, where we bring a lot of resources into the Black community. I'm on the board for an organization for Tears of Eden. I do one-on-one clients and a whole lot of other stuff. So that's a little commercial about my life.
Well, good for you for taking the hand you were dealt and slowly finding redemption. Some of the themes of our lives are similar. All the details are very, very different. Mm. I mean, I also had really poor modeling in my family. Mm-hmm. So you were given this idea of, well, the kinds of respect or dignity you received as a kid, or lack of, it's hard to know how you should be treated later in life, because there was no modeling of it.
Right.
So you kind of, as teenagers do, look for your identity. You found it through all this. You know, in your story, there's so many themes describing the shadows of our culture that you've gone through, this whole conspiracy problem. I mean, this is not new, but it's certainly exploding right now with people just believing nonsense and like weird stuff and creepy stuff, racist, anti-Semitic, hateful, hostile stuff that's just ridiculous. It sounds ludicrous to just the normal thinking person, and yet you dive in and it becomes a whole world. I've lost friends through this, and it's very hard to crack out of that kind of tunnel vision. But anyway, so you went on, and you say you got into 5 different cults, and you're also dealing with this problem within the Black community. So I also got into a cult in LA. I was in a cult for a few years. And the interesting thing about it was revelatory. I did find a lot of meaning and friendship and love and self-discovery. Of course, these were kind of Venice hippies, not at all Christian. But there was a lot of important formative experiences, but wrapped in a lot of cult-like behavior.
Yeah.
And I ended up, you know, trying to enroll other people in the cult and doing things I'm frankly ashamed of doing right now. So let's talk about the cult part for a minute, and then we can go on to other issues.
And that's an interesting point about the conspiracy theory. You know, especially during 2020, I don't have the statistics to quantify this, but I believe there are a lot of cults really started to just explode around 2020, 2021, when the pandemic happened. Our generation hasn't seen anything like this. And so typically people can get drawn in to cults, but particularly conspiracy theory type cults or people, when you don't have a sufficient answer for what's going on. People are afraid. They want to protect themselves and they want to protect their loved ones. So when they don't have answers and they don't understand what's happening, this leaves a big gap and a big hole for those charismatic leaders to rise up and say, I knew this was coming 20 years ago. I knew that, you know, I have the answer. I've been on the mountain of Tibet and I've studied with the monks, and you need to listen to me if you want to figure out how to make it through. Now, they do it a whole lot more sinister than what I just presented. But when people are afraid, when society is afraid, when they don't have sufficient answers from their government, when it seems totally foreign to their normal day-to-day routine, and they feel like they cannot protect themselves and their family, people are more susceptible to being drawn into these type of places. So you look at QAnon, you look at, you know, a lot of these political cults, you know, and there's this myth that cults are only in the religious sect, and that's not true. There's political cults, there's doomsday cults, you know, there's in the Black community, there's a lot of Black consciousness community type cults. And so I believe 2020 did a lot, good and bad. A lot of people got swept away because there were people that said, hey, I have the answers. And people believed them. They were afraid. So you run to the person or the institution that seems to have the answers for now and for the future. And because the use of social media in 2024 and society in a societal way, a lot of us have not been taught how to have healthy skepticism, how to critically think, how to hear information, read information, receive information. But then what do I do with that information? You know, these are some of the things I had to learn post-cults, you know, as I started to heal and rehabilitate my life.
The word colonialism is bandied about a lot these days. So what happens when a bigger power comes to another nation and kind of pillages it and rapes it and takes its resources and breaks traditional culture? What's left is, you know, it's like you get the weeds and the cockroaches and the rats coming in because the pillars of that society are gone. And you have these charismatic leaders or warlordism, that come along and take advantage of the lack of organization.
Yes.
Getting a little bit lofty right now, in some very generalized, I don't want to trivialize colonialism, but in some very generalized way, social media is actually doing that to the whole world. Like all the pillars that we have leaned against, family and community and friends, it's all kind of gotten weakened and shaky because people are in their phones for hours a day and they're losing their social skills. You know, I talked to one acting teacher who teaches in high school, and she says, kids don't know how to act on stage anymore compared to 15 or 20 years ago because they don't know how to relate to each other as like human beings. So they don't know how to talk to people anymore. So this is a thing. So in this kind of almost colonialized society by social media, there is this huge void, and it's getting filled with what you're talking about: charismatic leaders, simple answers to complicated problems, and you know, this is kind of the rats and cockroaches and weeds coming in and infesting our whole society. So it's widespread and it's subtle. There aren't people on ships coming with cannons. This is just like woven into our daily life in very subtle ways. Complicated times we're in. I just said a mouthful.
the subtlety of these charismatic leaders and how they're able to kind of almost scan who we are and kind of understand how to meet certain needs that may have not been met in childhood, may have not been met in different interpersonal relationships in adulthood. And they know how to drill right into that area of need and our desires to have impact and on this planet. You know, there's a desire for purpose. There's a desire for impact. And so these groups will let you know, here are the problems and here is how you can get involved and make society a better place. And who doesn't want to, you know, have some level of impact on the world and a good impact? At least that's what we think. But it's like the frog in the pot, the proverbial frog with the, you know, you turn the temperature up. They don't know that they're actually being cooked in the pot. And it is a slippery slope when it comes to, you know, being drawn into conspiracy theories and different charismatic leaders that have an agenda to serve them.
Just so we also present perhaps the opportunity of this dissipating world. Like, some of the bad things from the past are also dissolving. In other words,
yeah,
just this assumption of, well, misogyny, women being inferior, or people in the minority being suppressed, oppressed, all that was just taken for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout his civilization, different colors, different religions, depending on what period of time you were in, but that also can dissolve, and actually we can have a new vision now. It's actually there can be a spiritual rebirth where we look at the content of people's character instead of these, you know, how much money people make and
right.
these other factors. So it is a time of great opportunity.
It is.
But I think it's a bit overwhelming because, you know, we do see the cockroaches and rats scurrying around, gobbling up everything they can.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, we definitely have
a time of opportunity.
A time of opportunity. Yeah. Turning lemons into lemonade, if you will.
We can have a new vision. I mean, any ideas there? I mean, you yourself have become a therapist and are using the pains or wounds you received to find new ideas and help other people.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I was not planning on doing this work. As a matter of fact, before 2020, I wasn't even letting people know that I was a cult survivor unless you were in my immediate circle. And even that, it has such a negative connotation. But when I started, you know, frequenting in some of the rooms on Clubhouse and started sharing my story, I realized there's power in sharing my story, too. So a lot of shame was broken off of me just being able to realize, OK, this is helping others. This is beneficial to others. And so for me, like, for instance, when it comes to religious trauma, cults and things of that nature, you know, there's a spectrum of how people can get involved to help others. Some people find themselves being activists and they're going to these churches and these cults and they're calling them to the carpet and they're pulling back the curtain and exposing so other people would know, hey, this is not a nice place. And I salute those people. You know, there are others that say, hey, I've left those institutions, but I'm going to go back into those institutions because I still believe those institutions can be rehabilitated. That's awesome, too. But it's kind of like knowing your lane. For me, I feel like I shine the most I'm the most beneficial when I go right into the proverbial infirmary where a lot of the wounded are. A lot of the broken are, a lot that feel like I've been through cults, I've been through religious trauma and abuse. Society says there's no place, that I have no value anymore. I like to go right into that place and sit with them like a nurse would, you know, a vet that's been wounded and help them see the beauty and the value in them so that they can go and find them place and their place and their self back into society, whatever that looks like. I enjoy that. I enjoy one-on-one clients and connecting with them. I also enjoy support groups. Some people don't like that, but it's about finding your lane. I'm not a big activist type person because for me, I had to put some closure to what I experienced and heal myself and continue to heal so that I can turn and let others know that healing is possible too. So I need to see those activists out there. I need to see those who feel like, hey, I can go back into these institutions and really try to shake them up and say, hey, look what's happening. But for me, I like those who feel like all hope is lost. I've been wounded. I don't see how rehab can happen. And that's where, you know, I feel like that's my place in society right now.
Applause to you. Good for you for finding this vehicle and finding the way out. So when you were 19, you got into a cult. And from what I understand from other people who have talked about cults, unless you deconstruct, unless you kind of break it all down and understand what's going on, you're very vulnerable to go into another cult. So I'm guessing something that like that happened. Can you talk more about those that story and the five cults you went into?
Yeah.
And well, along with some of the TMZ details, the gory details, if you can identify certain facets of these pernicious organizations that people can watch for to know it's how do we know? So go ahead.
Right.
Your story.
Well, absolutely. Unless someone deconstructs and realizes the why, the what, the who, and get understanding of what they've been through, it's just like being in a toxic relationship with a romantic partner. Unless you take some time and breathe and kind of see what happened, the likelihood and the probability that it may happen again just with a different partner is higher. So that is part of the reason why the term is called cult hopping. I was a cult hopper. I didn't know. And because I spiritualized a lot of my experience. It wasn't, though, after I left one cult, I just said, I'm not going to process anything. I'm just going to find somewhere else. It wasn't that simple. It was, okay, the enemy did this. The devil did this, you know, and I don't want him to win by me having a defeated life by not going to another church. So I'm going to show him, let me find another house of worship. And that's also rhetoric that comes out of the Black church. You know, there's this notion that you are only in God if you are in church. And to be outside of church and not active, you are now prey for the enemy. So that was drilled into me early age. And I just knew I can't be out too long without finding another house of worship. And so that is how I began to continue to cult hop. The first cult was predominantly Black church. The other subsequent cults was more non-Black, a mixture of, you know, more diverse. Black was still a minority. And they were all religious cults, but some were hybrids of religious cult and political cults. So I have five main ones that I was a part of. One of them was not brick and mortar. It was more online. And I'll possibly get into that later. But in addition to the five, I was still very connected to a lot of other ministries that were very cult-like, that were very Christian nationalists, and NAR, New Apostolic Reformation, which has a lot to do with how we get to Project 2025, how we get to Roe v. Wade being overturned, how we get to a lot of the political attention that we see now, and some of the things that potentially they want to do. A lot of that came from the NAR Christian nationalist leaders, but that's a whole nother story. So I was involved in a lot of these things, the pro-life movements. I went to pro-life rallies. I went to prayer rallies. I had the red tape over my mouth that said life. And I stood in front of a lot of courthouses and silently prayed for the ending of abortion. So my life was all of these things. You know, sometimes I feel like, okay, I think I've lived like six different lives in this one life, because I've had to unlearn and relearn so many times in my life. But I don't regret it, because every time I did, I got to a more authentic version of who I am. A lot of those other versions were based off of what other people told me I needed to be, from my family of origin, to the belief system I was under, to the cult leaders I was under. And it was a false persona or an inauthentic persona, though I thought it was real. But post cults, post all of that, and doing my own healing work, I love this version of me. I am proud of this version of me. I've had to fight for this version of me. And I had to sift through a lot of, okay, I was taught this. I was given this belief. Where did this come from? Did it come from me? No. Came from grandma. Okay. How do I feel about that belief now in 2024? Is it divisive for me to hold that belief? Is it loving for me to hold that belief? You know, is it inclusive when I hold that belief? What do I feel about that? So I've had to do a lot of that sifting, and a lot of people, a lot of survivors run from that process because it's a lot of work. I am still pulling belief systems out and saying, huh, what do I think about that now? But I encourage survivors, if you can do that, man, you can find, like, I love this person that I am now. Still have flaws and weaknesses, but it's more authentic than what I was in these cults. And so, yeah, so again, and one of the cults I was in, it's been in the news for the past year. It's called International House of Prayer in Kansas City, and they've been in the news since October of last year. The leader has been caught in allegedly a lot of sexual assault cases, and as they pull the curtain back, they're seeing other leaders that have been there serving him have also been involved in that. It's really nasty. If people want to know what I'm talking about, go to Google and look up International House of Prayer in Kansas City and you will get all the tea. But I was a part of that. And that was a more end time type of cult. And so that can do a number on you because you're always thinking that the end is coming, the end is near. And their teaching was different. They taught that the end will, you know, the rapture will happen, but the true believers will not be raptured. They will be here first, and they will be the prophets and the evangelists and the healers that is necessary to help people to endure those years of tribulation. So it is necessary to be in that organization. It is necessary to pray. It's necessary to know all these things because you're going to be the voices of tomorrow. And you're not going to be afraid when the end time events happen. You're going to know exactly what to do. And so people did not want to move away. They felt this was the place and space that was giving wisdom for now, wisdom for later. And I can't go to a regular church now. They're not going to talk about these things. So a lot of young people were involved in that ministry. A lot of people gave up scholarships to Harvard and Yale. A lot of people left their places of employment, doctors and lawyers, and moved to this place because they believed this mission and this vision. There's more to their mission and vision, but charismatic leader is one main marker to know if you're in a cultic type of environment. That leader puts himself or herself as the end all be all. Some are more covert than others. That first cult I was a part of, the cult leader was a woman. As a matter of fact, that cult leader is my daughter's grandmother. So you can imagine what I had to go through. My daughter's 23 now, but I had a lot to go through being the fact that though I got out the cult, she was still connected to that family. But charismatic leader, very seemingly to know all, there's just something about them that draws you to them. It's just like, wow, when they speak, I just have to listen. Over time, as you continue to digest and ingest a lot of their information, there's a power dynamic and it's very subtle. You start to dismiss your own ability to reason, your own wisdom, your own intuition, and you start to put it on the leader and say, well, they know a lot. They've had this experience. I haven't had that experience. So they really must know what they're talking about. And that power dynamic starts to change. And next thing you know, you are just drawn in. Every time you talk to people, you're talking about, well, Pastor so-and-so said, leader so-and-so said, and it's no longer your words. So it's like, where is Nikki if Nikki's always talking about Pastor so-and-so, right? So a charismatic leader where people basically worship them, and it's not demonstrative worship where you're bowing down, but it's in your mind, they have taken the pinnacle seat in your mind and in your heart. You believe everything that comes out their mouth. You want to obey them because you believe that they are called for this hour to do the work that they're doing. And it is very easy to spiritually bypass the egregious things that they do, the abusive things that they do, because in your mind, they're God appointed, God anointed, the man and woman of the hour. And they've got the wisdom that I don't have, so I'm going to stick with them. And this is what goes on internally and subconsciously. Then there's that authoritarian control where you liked them in the beginning. They love bombed you. You got drawn in. But now, you know, 6 months in, you're like, wait a minute, something doesn't sound right. But they're the leader. And they start to realize that you're starting to question things. And now they're starting to use their authority. Well, God called me to be your leader and you need to obey and submit to what I'm leading you because I'm supposed to watch over your soul. So you have the authority and they'll use fear, guilt, shame to continue to hook, line and pull you in and make sure you do not leave. Right. Then you have the isolation from society, you know, and it looks different because people are connected to cults online. And people will be like, well, it's online. What does that look like? I was a part of an online cult. It's not that you don't see your family or your friends. It may dwindle, but you are so consumed with the teachings, the community, the ministry. You're not really receiving anything else anyone has to say. You know, for the more extreme cults, you're moving on to the compound. You are living with the leadership. You know, I've done some of that to an extent in the beginning with some of the other cults, but it has that isolation from society. And, you know, there's just so many different other themes that, you know, extreme beliefs, very black and white thinking, whatever the leader says is gold, so to speak. And, you know, there is a lot of groupthink, you know, free thought, critical thinking, healthy skepticism is not welcomed, is actually shunned, and you're considered to be an enemy in their territory, so to speak. So these are some of the main markers that you would see in a cultic or high demand group. For those that are saying, well, how do I know that's a cult? How do I know that he's a cult leader? Yeah. So those are just some of them.
Well, what brings us into these groups is, you know, some looking for self, either as a teenager or trying to find our identity, or we're just part of a generalized culture that's confused and that is lacking in care and love and dignity and finding our muse, doing our arts, writing, thinking, really like thoughtful people. So there's an absence of that. And these cults provide an easy answer. As I say, either as a young person, which that's natural at that age, or even as adults. I mean, I've been trying to figure out who I was. You know, I'm 65. I finally figured it out last week. So, you know, I'm good now. But then it comes to the deconstructing after you've been subjected to this abuse. And you're saying the deconstruction, you have to do some self-examination. You have to face pain. You have to face things you've done that are not, you're not proud of, or that are sinister, that hurt other people. Mm-hmm. Or you have to face the fact that you were wrong. It's like when people believe things, it's very hard for them to admit that they believed something that was in error. So that keeps people in these crazy movements and religions for years and decades, or till the day they die, because they can't admit they were wrong.
Yeah.
They can't change their mind. They can't take another look and say, like, if you were a business person and your business starts to fail, you would go, well, yeah, I've got to move on, sell that, or you buy a stock and it's going down. Well, don't throw good money after bad. Like, we can do that when it has an external, it's something out there we can change. But when it's our belief, well, I believed it, so it must be right. So we can't get out of that little tunnel. Mm-hmm. So, but for you, what were some of the specific things that kind of motivated a reassessment? Were you simply concerned about some of the teachings, more an intellectual thing like, hey, this doesn't make sense, or this doesn't agree with my values? Or were you the subject of more abusive behavior? You know, was it more of an intellectual, mental thing? Or, you know, people were taking advantage of you? Or both?
Yeah, it was both. And like I said, you would think, you know, after one cult, two cults, I would get tired of that. But I didn't see them as that. I just thought, okay, it didn't work out there. That's not every place. And again, because I spiritualized things only, that was my form of recovery, so to speak. So I felt like, all right, well, the enemy did this, so I'm going to go into this place and this place. The last cult I was in, the fourth cult really broke me. The fifth cult, I was just moving like, a, you know, just routine. And then that was the online cult. When I left all of that, I just remember saying, again, you know, I didn't even realize it was five. I just remember again, like I was attributing to the first cult. And I'm like, how did I miss this? So I said, you know, I was so... The straw that broke the camel's back had already happened. I was so like at a low place in my life that I was willing to not spiritualize it this time. And so I did something that I didn't do in the other previous cults after the last one. I started going online and learning, and I stepped out of the spirituality of it. And I started learning about the psychology of it. I started reading books by cult experts, you know, Stephen Hassan, Dr. Yanya Lalish, Margaret Sanger, Rick Allen Ross. I started reading and watching their videos, and I'm like, and it was, to your point, it hurt because I had to admit that a lot of stuff that I was a part of that I thought was God-led, God-anointed, God-appointed was actually cults. And It's shameful initially. It hits your ego, really. It hits your ego because you go in thinking, oh, this is the best thing since sliced bread. And then that progresses to, I know God called me to this. Or I know I'm supposed to be in this political movement right now. I know I'm supposed to help change society because it's going to hell in a handbag, you know. And so I knew when I was in it. And then to come out and realize what it really was, like the mirage was over now, it strikes your ego. And we don't like that feeling. But the kicker was for me, I was so at rock bottom. I didn't care if my ego was hit at that point. I was in so much pain. I wanted to understand what I had been through and how can I make sure this does not repeat itself. I didn't want to be a part of a sixth cult, right? So initially, I just started reading and learning from myself and at the time, my teenage daughter. And I said, if we can be all right, then I'm good. Right. And so I went to therapy. I had therapists. I wind up teaching them more than they were teaching, helping me because, you know, narcissism at that time, you know, it wasn't as popular as it is now. And cults, forget about it. So after a while, but my complex PTSD was so severe. I didn't care that they didn't know all about it. I just needed help right then and right now. So, you know, shout out to the licensed mental health professionals that even though they may not have this expertise, they really do still try to help clients because it did help me a little. But it wasn't until I got that psychoeducation and understood what I had been through, how it happened, right? Why it happened. So there's some generational patterns there. The vulnerabilities I had to these cults, I wanted to make impact. I've always been like that, even as a child. You know, I wanted to do something to help someone else. And so they used that. You know, I had the ability to see people why they did what they did, if that makes sense. And so I was more forgiving and more understanding, and I was young, you know, so that had a lot to do with it too. And so I started to see how I got where I got. But the biggest part of my recovery was when I was able to connect the religious trauma and the religious abuse with the developmental trauma that I experienced in my family of origin. Basically, it was a copy and paste family dynamic that I was looking for and I was attracted to. So in my family of origin, I was kind of taught indirectly, because they probably would not admit it, I was taught indirectly to not connect with my intuition, to ignore my red flags, and to believe the authority figure's reality. So my reality was considered distorted. Their reality was considered true and right. So I can see the sky is blue, but they taught me the sky was brown. And I knew something was wrong, but I was conditioned to believe it was brown, and something was wrong with me why I didn't see that it was blue. And so what that did is, as I got older, people that were predatorial seemed safe. If I had a red flag, I didn't trust it. If my intuition said this is not right, I didn't trust it. So they seemed safe, but they also seemed familiar. So this was a real big eye-opening thing for me during that season of recovery, when I was able to link it to how the patterns of that narc family system contributed to the different cults. Now, I made the choice. I'm not blaming them, but I'm understanding how I was conditioned and programmed. It was inevitable for me to be attracted to that. So recovery looked like understanding those patterns, being courageous to see it, because it's hard to see how our families of origin played a part and the choices we made. But I was determined, I want healing. I want to be free more than I want to feel ashamed about these things. So understanding it and then starting to break those cycles and those patterns and starting to enact some boundaries and some healthy skepticism and let's not go fast, let's go slow so we can observe and see what this is. And so that helps me a lot to be able to move forward personally. Then when I started doing this work, I started, you know, giving these keys, if you will, to other people that I've been working with to help them to connect with themselves first, because that's the key, not to follow Nikki, but you have an inner box, you have a treasure chest of wisdom and value that is yours. And helping people to connect back with themselves, to me, is the bigger blessing, if you will, in all of this that I do.
Well, you just made some connections for me. I mean, thinking back to my family, how, you know, my intuition was not encouraged. My whole life now is about mm-hmm. my intuition and feeling my feelings and so forth. Like, that's our inner voice, our inner, you know, knowing. And also having to bow to an abusive authority. So there's a lot of similar themes, as I said. And thanks for speaking it, because that helps me. But hearing the arduous mm-hmm. journey out of these super controlling situations, how hard it was, how you had to turn yourself inside out, and it took a long time, and how, you know, painful it was, that doesn't bode well for, you know, the millions of people out there in cults right now. I mean, it's rigorous, it's very difficult to get out, and it takes a lot of facing down demons, so to speak, personal demons, to do that. I think the opportunity of these times is that there's a lot of people like yourself who are accessible, who are online, who are on social media, who can be resources, who can give you a lifeline and explain what's going on. So I never saw that 5 and 10 years ago. And there's a lot of this truth telling right now. And what a blessing. Mm-hmm. Because as the cults have gone up and as the wreckage has increased and the difficulty of getting out of it, but so has this response, which is so healthy mm-hmm. and rebuilding of people. So this is a very encouraging sign. A couple last issues. Let's talk specifically about the Black community and the cults going on, the specific challenges there.
Yeah. When I started doing the work, like I said, running rooms and Clubhouse, what I noticed was there were a lot of people in the Black community that were coming into those spaces and sharing their stories. A lot of them broke down and said, I have never told anybody about this part of my life. And I feel like it's still affecting me now, but I didn't know where to go. Or you're speaking my story. I went through that too. And they said, where can I go? And at the time, I mean, I wasn't finished with my training. I wasn't coaching at the time, but just sharing. And I started searching for resources for the Black community, and I didn't really find much, you know. And so myself and another colleague who we got connected through Clubhouse as well, we got a chance to just talk and say, wait a minute, where are the resources? Our experiences are different. There are a lot of cultural, you know, differences amongst us. How can we feel comfortable and safe to share a lot of this? And so we got together and said, well, let's talk about it first. We know to do that. Let's talk about it. And so we started a podcast called Surviving the Black Church Podcast. And it's all, you know, different places where you would listen to podcasts. We did season one. We're working on season two, which should be dropping in the beginning of next year. But in that place, we wanted to use that as a resource. The first season is really about a lot of psychoeducation, talking about things, even unpacking what is religious trauma, you know, what is religious abuse, the difference between that and spiritual abuse. The term that's used a lot in the Black community and the Black churches is the term church hurt, and distinguishing the difference between church hurt and religious abuse and religious trauma. Terminology really, really matters. And I say that because had I known in a lot of these cults that I was actually enduring abuse, I wouldn't have remained as long as I did. Perhaps I might not have been a 5-time cult survivor, maybe a 2-time. I don't know. But because, I mean, I wasn't even familiar with the term church hurt at the time. So that didn't really affect me much. But when I was going through a lot of what was abusive experiences, like I told you before, I would rationalize it and I would justify it and I would spiritualize it as this is just the enemy trying to get me out of my place in the army of God. I have much to do. I've got all these prophecies on my back that I'm going to do this and I'm going to go to the nations. And so that elitism and that pride kept me in these abusive places. Had I known that that's what it was, I would have left. And that's why I know I'm just up and coming in the cult world, in the religious trauma world, but I'm going to say this just flat out. I am a person that really believes that we should not water down terminology. I understand that sometimes people feel that, well, we don't want to offend other people, you know, using the word cult is, you know, people get offended. People need to hear it because maybe if they hear it's an actual cult, they may have the wherewithal to remove themselves from it. If we give all these other, you know, synonyms and it's watered down and it's not as potent, sometimes people need that potent truth to wake up, to exit. You know, and so for me, that's what I needed. But a lot of times in the Black community, getting back to your original question, church hurt is used a lot. But the problem is it's lumped in with, you know, there is true church hurt. People do get hurt of different things. They got overlooked for a song, overlooked for a ministry. They were a little emotionally wounded. But that's different from sexual abuse by the associate pastor in the church, right? Just like if you go to the hospital, you get a little a burn from opening the oven. That's different from someone who got in a car accident and now they need surgery. So just like in a hospital setting, terminology matters. With this work, terminology matters. And so myself and my colleagues with the podcast, we have been trying to help to educate, to validate a lot of the Black community's experiences. Because this is the thing, in the Black community, we are generationally taught that if you survived it, then don't talk about it. You survived it, you're out of it, it's out of you probably, so go ahead and do what you need to do with your life. But as you know, as trauma survivors, that doesn't work. That trauma sits and it festers and it gets in your body. It affects your personal relationships, etc. So helping the Black community to break that notion, that belief system that we've been through it, we may not be in it anymore, and I don't need to tell anybody. So this is why we have support groups, free online support groups, where they can come and share their experiences. And we talk about a lot of topics that are pertinent in the Black community. And so we have also developed something called the Black Religious Trauma Recovery Network. We are working on our website. So, but in that, we want to give offerings, and just different resources to the Black community, from different mental health professionals, different resources, everything, they can find right there on the website. So we're doing that behind the scenes, but we feel that it's important, for resources to be by us and for us, because the Black community, there's big stigmas when it comes to mental health. We don't trust systems, rightfully so, because of what we've experienced, you know, historically what we've experienced, even in this country. But I think it helps for people to see that there are practitioners that are laboring and bringing resources so, you know, healing and recovery can actually take place.
Well, Nikki G, any closing words? We covered some pretty difficult but important territory.
Well, if you're out there and you didn't stop in the first minute or so and you stay with us to the very end and you're driving in your car, or you're washing the dishes, or you're a mom and you're running your kids to soccer practice, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to my story, you know, but you may be a survivor. Maybe you didn't realize that you've been through spiritual abuse or religious abuse. Maybe you're a Black man or a Black woman and you're like, whoa, like this is really, you know, tying a lot of loose ends for things I did not know. Thanks for your courage to actually take that in, because it's very easy to, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to listen to this. I don't want to deal with this. But as we face our shadows and we face the wounded parts of us, understand that does not devalue us because we have wounds. That just makes us human, right? So I encourage you to seek out mental health professionals if that's what you need to unpack more of your story. You can visit my website if you want to talk more. You can find my email there if you want to send me a message. But most importantly, what I can leave you with is you might have been through similar experiences, maybe not as major and intense as mine or Pete's. But at the end of the day, you having a connection with yourself and being able to come back home to yourself, and being able to look inside of yourself and see beauty and value and wisdom in there, to me, is the biggest thing. If I didn't say anything else today, that is what I want to leave you with. You are beautiful on the inside, and it's just a matter of you connecting what's in the head and taking that journey down to the heart, and then taking that journey down to the belly and see what beautiful things actually reside in you. And so if any of this interests you and you like my work, you can check out my website, check out the podcast if that it helps you. We have support groups if that's something you would want to avail yourself of. They are free. So you can check that out as well. They're every second and fourth Thursday of the month. And so, yeah, just check out my site if you dare and find out more information. But thanks for listening. And I hope something that was said by myself or Pete was helpful on your life's journey.
Well, thank you so much, Nikki G of NikkiGSpeaks.com. Thank you for your beautiful words. Very well spoken.
Thank you, Pete. Thanks for having me as a guest.
Sisters and brothers, 'cause if you do, you can hear There are voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other. Let our brothers know that we care. Got to get the message, send it out loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. It's a single truth we all need, just to hear and to see. None of us are free. Salvation isn't too hard to find. None of us can find it on our own. We've got to join together in spirit, heart, and mind, so that every soul who's suffering will know. Smaller each passing day.
Passing day.
Now it's time to start making changes, and it's time for us all to realize that the truth is shining bright right before our eyes. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us is chained. None of us are free.
Thank you.
We are coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interviewed the extraordinary Nikki G. And we just wrapped things up with a tune by Solomon Burke called None of Us Are Free. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the very best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out.